Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. These messages are intended to spark your own reflections and conversations all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime along with other resources and ways to keep the conversation going at fabricmpls.com/scraps.
Good morning, Fabric. My name is Nick Tyson, and I just want to welcome every one of you. And today is all about story. So I get to, for a living, hear stories and share stories. It's kind of cool. I can't really believe that it's what I get to do, but I get to do it. I think of my work as creating space. And it's something that is so basic, but we so often forget to do it. Everybody's got a story. Everybody's got something that, or a million things, really, that have brought them to where they are now. And I think there's so much power in being able to bear witness to that. Story does a lot of things. And so what we're doing today is we're going to hear from a couple of people their stories, or pieces of their stories. I kind of just want to set the tone for that, so I'll be sharing just a little bit of my own story, and I want to give you a couple touch points throughout my life that have brought me to where I am now, and what I guess has led up to what I get to do with story. It's always hard to know where to start with a story, but you just dive in, and that's where it is. So my parents always had rental properties, and so I grew up in the house that had all these other floors and places that my parents rented out, and so there's this interesting mix of people, renters, that would come and go, and so I saw this really interesting, quirky, awesome, strange, frightening cross-section of humanity throughout the years, and that, like, kind of looking back on it, I feel like it sort of laid the groundwork for a lot of what I'm passionate about now. I was also really blessed as a kid, and even today, to have a wide variety of friend groups. I never felt like I had one core group of friends. I had a lot of really good friends and a lot of really deep friendships, but I was able to sort of move between all of these different groups, which was super cool, because I got to, I don't know, see different sides of humanity. And that really also laid the groundwork for a lot of what I get to do now. I've also gotten to travel a little bit, which I'm sure you all know too, is just this really neat way of expanding the way that you see the world. And that can be, you know, honestly traveling to another neighborhood too. There's this term micro-adventures, which I love, and it's this idea that you can go, you know, down the street and find an experience or a person or an insight that you've not had before. And so these stories are really accessible to us, and I started thinking about how can I swim in this space of story? How can I see other stories? How can I be conscious of the fact that Story is something that is continually evolving. And so I started this project when I was at doing my undergrad at in St. Peter. I started this project. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Humans of New York. Yeah, and if you're not, you should really check it out. It's this Facebook page, and this guy wanders the streets of New York, and he does these interviews with people, just these micro interviews. Takes their photo and then posts a little bit of the snippet on the Facebook page, and it's got, like, I don't know, tens of millions of followers, so people see it, and it's just these raw stories of what it means to be human. So I started that project on my college campus, and it was just, like, set me on fire just to wander around, stop people in their tracks, like, hey, can I talk to you for a little bit? Like, I just want to get to know you as a person. And I think the campus does, too. And I didn't say that, but that's kind of crazy, but that was the idea with it. And it just opened this door of human connection, which was really something that it's just always been kind of boiling inside of me. After college, I was working with my family business for 2 years, and I was, the family business is doing wood flooring, and so we're running equipment all day, and so I have my headphones on and listening to audiobooks and podcasts, and it's just like all these ideas, 8 hours a day, just like, it was the continuation of learning, which was super cool. But I was missing this human component. I decided to, in 2016, there was some pretty catastrophic flooding in Louisiana. This is like a pivotal story for me in my journey of storytelling. And so I wanted to see what it was like, you know, to be to be a human in this space after it had been completely devastated. And so I waited a month to go down, you know, after the media had gone down and left. So I went down. I got connected with this guy, Tim, and we had set up, his house had been, you know, destroyed by the flooding. I told him what I was doing. I'm here to, you know, bear witness to a story and to tell it. And he's like, yeah, come on over, meet at my house at 9 o'clock. So I was just about to leave to go to his house that morning, and he calls me and he's like, Nick, I can't meet anymore. My dad is going into hospice. Like, he's dying. I have to go see him. I'm like, yeah, if you have to cancel, that's fine. He's like, no, I still really want to do this, though. So come to my house at 3. So I went to his house at 3. I was going to be there for an hour, maybe 2 hours. And I left at 3 a.m. And to make the story short, I had asked him, you know, what is something in this broad story that's not being talked about? Like, what's not being told here? He gave some answer, and a couple hours later, we were sitting around his campfire, and he's like, in his driveway, and he's like, Nick, I thought of an answer to your question. And he goes into this, like, hour and a half monologue, this story about how, as a kid, he'd struggled with these thoughts of suicide and not, you know, belonging on the planet. And he's like, I had gotten rid of all of that, and this flooding has brought all of that back. And that's something nobody talks about. People talk about how they've lost their house. People talk about the financial hardships. But people don't talk about how this is making me, like, not want to be on the planet anymore. And there was something in that moment where I was like, wow, this is like so human. This is just, how often do we get to do this? How often is there space to talk about this kind of stuff? And so I just thought, like, wow, there's nowhere else in the world that I should be at this exact point. I don't know if you've all felt that before, but just like, you know, like this is the moment. And so that really opened this space of wanting to create space and wanting to tell story. And I think what story does, I mean, it does a lot of things, but for me, what it's done, I think it has the ability to teach us things about ourselves and about each other in a way that other modes of conveying information don't. And a story is more than just information dumping. It's an expression of what it means to be human and to share that humanity with each other. And so that's sort of what we're doing today. That's the idea. So one note about listening to stories is that it's really about listening. You know, it's not about critiquing or dissecting or questioning somebody's story. I think people sharing their stories, it'll bring up questions for us. And what I've found to be really powerful is to sort of set those questions aside and listen to that story and then come back to those questions afterwards. And there's a really just sort of neat exercise that I found so much life in listening to somebody's story. There's this piece about, like, listening for the essence of that person. You know, you're listening to the words, but it's more than the words. Like, what is this human being saying? What is the core of this person saying, and how is it being expressed through this story? And really holding that space. So I'd encourage you to sort of dive into that and just, you know, sit and create this space for stories to be shared. I'd like to welcome our first storyteller, Sylvia.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me here. I feel honored because Nick asked me on Friday to share my story with you guys, and I have a long story. I feel like I am a 100-year-old woman with all this, my life. I was born in Ecuador. I was raised in Ecuador. I came to Minnesota because I was in the Foreign Service, in the Ecuadorian Foreign Service, and in order for women to advance in their career, not men, but women, to advance in their career, the burden for education was higher, and I needed to do a master's on whatever to go back and escalate on my career. So I was married at that time with the father of my kids, and he won a super fellowship, a Fulbright fellowship. So through him, we decided to come as a family here. And he was the star, not only here, but also in Ecuador, because this fellowship was very, very prestigious. I think there were only four in the world, and he was awarded one of them. So I came always behind him, supporting him, and I applied to the University of Minnesota. I ended up being accepted at the U, at law school, because I was already an attorney working. I had already a PhD in law, and I was working as a secretary for all the men in the Foreign Service, ambassadors and, you know, the hierarchy. And normally my bosses didn't even have a bachelor's degree. So anyways, I ended up finishing my LLM, my master's, the LLM is a master's, and in the way the father of my kids decided that the family wasn't really something that he wanted to remain in, so he left. And we never heard back from here until 2 years later. We were dependents on his visa. He was the student, he was the rock star. We were only dependents on him. So when he left, we turned to be undocumented. My two kids, who were at that time 4 and 5 years old. And I became undocumented. And this is the real thing about my story, the gratitude that I have for the people that I met here in Minnesota. There was no one single person that didn't say, we're gonna help you. Even the dean of law school, he said, you know, we need to figure it out. Apply for a JD to finish, you know, the JD, because that was the only way to get a visa to remain here legally. I didn't want to go back because my identity, my life, my everything was left us. And I was with two little ones. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have a social security number. He took away every single thing from the banks. He closed the accounts. It was a very well-planned thing that I never imagined that I could have gone through. I remember that the first week that he left, I went to get groceries. And I have a TCF card that was the bank from the University of Minnesota. And the woman kept swiping it, swiping, and I didn't have money to feed my kids. Because even though I was working, and we sold our belongings in Ecuador to bring the money here, you know, to be able to support his studies, he took everything. Well, that was one of the many struggles. I thought that we were going to become homeless because who is going to give me a space to live? And we were living at that time at the CTC, at the student housing of the University of Minnesota. But in order for us to remain there, we needed, somebody has to be enrolled as a student. And my English was not perfect. It was, you know, so I was kind of scared of going back to law school again. Not kind of scared, I was really scared. And I ended up just living, literally telling God, I am in your hands. I don't know what else to do, just guide me. But I got into a very severe depression and I started drinking. I've never drunk in my life. But I felt like drinking was the only way that I could numb my feelings. And it was so scary at some point because my little ones didn't know what was going on. Well, I went back to law school and I said, what would you do for me to get a visa? And I found an angel and she said, take the LSAT. The LSAT was 2 weeks from that day. And I said, okay, I'm gonna take the LSAT. In my mindset, imagine, homeless, no money to feed the kids. My parents, I was blessed with a couple of parents and my dad especially. He was so supportive from the distance and he said, you know, you need to do whatever it takes to stay there. If you come back as a divorced woman, you will be trashed, you won't find a job, you won't be able to rejoin the Foreign Service. So just stay there and try to make it. So that kind of supported me, his support and my mom's support over the phone was making me stronger. But then my dad had a heart attack. This really hurt him. And he got a heart attack, he got a stroke, and he almost died. So I didn't want to tell them anymore what was going on in my life, so I was standing on my own with the kids. I lost that communication, I stopped telling them. So again, I went downhill, I get the LSAT. I don't know how I did it, but I passed the LSAT and I got admitted to law school. But believe me, not because I did good. I think I don't know, maybe, honestly, I flipped the coin to respond to the questions because I wasn't in the mindset. I went to law school, 2 more years. I got a scholarship based on merit, so I needed to do good. I read, I did my work, I did my homework, I did everything, but you know, I was in a surviving mode. And I needed to work to feed the kids, to pay for the rent, but at least I had a home, a place to stay. Well, fast forwarding, I finished law school, I made it, went back to Ecuador to rejoin the Foreign Service because I wasn't able to get, I didn't want to be here, remain here undocumented. That was something that was really scary to me because of all the things that as immigrants we needed, you know, to go through. So I went back and this is a story based on miracles. I just was grateful to have been able to be done with law school, went back. So they saw my resume and the president himself appointed me to come back to open up a post because of the work, the volunteer work that I was doing with immigrants. They saw we won 2 cases, human rights cases, while I was in law school with a professor that was my angel too. And that paid my career escalation, or I don't know. So going up depended on my resume. And he appointed me to become ambassador of Ecuador and open up a post here in Minnesota. But it was just a miracle. I got the appointment without even having an interview. I didn't have an interview. This guy didn't know me. Nothing. When I got there, I received a phone call and I thought that it was a joke. I received a phone call from the secretary of the presidency, and this woman said, we know that you're back, and this appointment, which is called exequatur, the exequatur has been admitted by the Department of State. But you need to, this has been sitting here for 6 months, and you need to go back immediately, because otherwise we have to apply for a new exequatur that can last for 6 more months, and we cannot do that. When she said that, I said, you know, this is a bad joke, and I don't like jokes like this. I am here with 2 kids. I sold my few belongings, and I need money to go back. And he said, well, you know what? There is no money for you, because we thought that you were going to be transferred directly there. So there is no money, no budget for you to go back. I said, okay, I want to see that letter. I want to see the exequatur, the appointment. But she said, tomorrow at 8:30 a.m., we are here for you. At 8:30, I went to the presidency. My name was there. That only then I relieved that I was going to be appointed, because my name was with the guards. So I met with the president because I needed to sign my thing. And he said, do you speak English? Well, a little. Well, can we do the interview in English? Yeah. The president of Ecuador. And, you know, it felt good when I met with him, because I felt like he really wanted to make a difference in the community, in the immigrant community here. And he knew my heart. And it was a connection there. So he said, you need to go back today or tomorrow at the very, because that was Thursday. I needed to come to be here by Monday with my credentials. Well, my dad said, we'll pay for the tickets for you and the kids, but you need to take this job. And that's how I came back to Minnesota. This was 2006. In 2016, after 10 years of an incredible journey here, that I only have gratitude for the people that I work for and with. I decided, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I think I can do more if I separate myself from the government, because the government was being turned to be very corrupted, as many governments in Latin America, because of the socialismo del siglo XXI, which is the socialism of the 21st century, which is a trending thing after Chavez in Venezuela. Ecuador was turning into one of them. So I said, you know, I need to live from my integrity, and I love the values that I live here in Minnesota, because I feel like Minnesota is a different place. Everything to me is run in a different way that in Ecuador. So I said, you know, I want my kids to live in a space of integrity. This is not about me. This is not about a successful career as a diplomat. This is about me as a person. I want to live from my values. And this is where I found my values. So in 2016, after 2 years I presented my resignation, I got admitted for my resignation because you need to get cleared as a diplomat. You cannot stay here in the U.S. unless both governments clear you. So it took me 2 years to be accepted to resign. And from being a diplomat, how many diplomats are in the world? I don't know. Having a diplomat passport gives you so many privileges, so many. But from being a diplomat to becoming undocumented again, being treated so badly by people all over. But you know what? 2 months ago, I got my green card, finally, after 3 years, yes. But it gave me so many opportunities to meet people that are really, really struggling with their immigration status and that have taught me so many lessons of courage. My story is nothing compared to what they live, really. And they are so grateful for every, and they value so much this country. They only want to do good. And they admire the people that are here. And it's not about, I was telling Christy this morning, it's not about being, underserved or poor. It's about being willing to make for a living for the families, for the community, to do good in the community. I lost my dad in the meantime, and that part is still hurting in my heart because I couldn't be there for him, even though he has always been there for me. And what keeps me going is the fact that perhaps I can become a voice to all those immigrants that are struggling and that are hurt and that are going through so much like I did. And I've committed myself. This is a promise that I did to my dad, that I will become a voice to every immigrant. I know that I can become an attorney, an immigration attorney, and help a lot by taking the bar, but I don't think this is my purpose in life. I want to become a voice to them, an activist for their rights. So that's my story, and I thank you for listening.
All right, I would like to welcome up our next storyteller. Yeah, let's welcome up Jim here.
To start this, I have to go back before I can even remember. I'm getting old, but that's not why. I met someone in my life before I can remember that was extremely important in my life. And we grew up and we went to schools together, hung out with the same group of people through high school. That was our little clique in high school. And had good times, like in high school you do. And then high school ended, life separates, everybody goes on their own way to find out what they're about. We reconnected later and still had things in common, things that were important to us. And it worked. And it worked well. It worked so well that we walked back up the aisle together after getting married. And things still kept going well. One of the things that went well was we started having kids. Kids are a big high point in life. They have their little low points, but everybody keeps moving forward and progressing. During the kids growing up, we swapped career lifestyles. She stayed home, I worked. I stayed home, and she worked. It was pretty much everything that I could envision it would be at that point. We were working, we were fairly successful in that regard. Kids kept growing. I couldn't stop that, unfortunately. Y2K came, the world didn't end. The kids kept growing. And 2003 came unexpectedly. My life changed. I knew my share of people that had come out, family, friends. In the spring of 2003, we sat in the car where all important conversations happen and talked for an hour and a half between tears and hugs and questions without answers. We changed each other's lives. Then we went in the house and tried to be normal. The person I'd hung out with, lived with for almost my whole life at that point, he just told me she couldn't do life that way anymore, or she wouldn't be able to do life at all. And that's scary. So, as someone stupidly smart said, if you love something, set it free. So I had to. I had to make that change because lives are too important. So now what? That question kept coming up, and there wasn't any good answers. You just kept living life, taking the best choices that you can at the time, keeping it together for each other and for the kids. They were a big priority throughout this whole thing. And kids being kids, they handled it reasonably well. They're very resilient. So during that time, I started coming here. I needed something different, something to change. I had church, but I needed something different in my life at that point. And I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what was missing anymore. So I came here and I found out what was missing. I was missing community. I had friends, I had family, I had work. I didn't have a community to belong to. So I came here. It fit, it worked, it helped a lot. I found some other community outside of here. That helped in both places. I could talk about me. I could talk about God. I couldn't talk about politics. I'm Norwegian. But we got through it all. And now, you know more about me. You know more me. I don't know all of me. My life's still going, growing, and I keep knowing more about me. Let's work on that all together. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. All right, I'd like to welcome up our last storyteller for the day, Ren. Welcome.
Most of my friends and the people in my life today do not know that my legal name is not Ren until we go out to dinner or lunch and I put my debit card on the table. But to start there is to get ahead of myself. When I was born, my parents had deliberated long and hard over what name to give me. Well, they had two names, actually, and they were waiting to see if I was a boy or a girl to make that final and what they thought would be permanent decision. And the name suited me well and felt good for about 20 years. That isn't to say that it was perfect, or that it didn't feel too small sometimes. My senior year of high school, I started to realize that it was getting a little itchy, a little tight. Maybe I wasn't quite as much of a girl, but I wasn't, it was really messy. And then I made it to college, and I was able to drop off the last 3/5 of my name, and all of a sudden that felt a little bit better. And I started to grow into myself and realize who I was and find friends who could respect the who I thought I was and what I needed from them, and they would experiment with pronouns or with names and things with me, and it felt really great. But that only lasted about a year. I made it to my second year of college, and all of a sudden, like, that name was feeling too tight. Like, it kind of seemed like a nickname, and it was really, really easy for people to, like, extrapolate what the rest of the name was. And, like, in knowing that people could make that assumption, it didn't feel right to me anymore. But I also didn't know what that meant for me. Every fall, the LGBTQIA plus students would like go on this retreat to a camp in the woods, and we'd all just like really be in community with each other, and it was one of my favorite things about college. And on the final night, we all were sitting in a circle, and we were reintroducing ourselves with our names and our pronouns to like kind of honor any changes that people might have felt they like could make for themselves, so that like as we left that space we'd be able to honor each other. And as it was coming to me, I'm like sitting there thinking, like, how am I, like, this name isn't working for me, but I don't have another one to use. Like, how am I going to tell these people, like, I don't have a name? It's so vulnerable. And like eventually, like, they get to me, and I'm like, my pronouns are they, them, but like actually I wouldn't like you to call me a name for a while. And they were just like, oh, okay, cool. Which was like as we're going around, like, I'm just like working myself up. And that went on for like a long time. I would like sit there by myself and like go over these baby name lists and like just thinking and thinking and thinking. And like nothing ever seemed right. And I like can remember a friend coming up to me like outside the coffee shop and being like, oh, hey, have you thought of a name yet? And I was like, no. No, I haven't. And then this went on for like a month. And there was times where I just felt like I was inconveniencing everyone else, that I just should just like revert to what it was before. Just like that'll be fine. Or felt like I needed to rush into a name that I didn't really feel a connection to, but it would just like be easier for everyone else to have something to say. And it was hard to sit there in that unknowing, that unnaming. But one day in the lecture, my mind started to wander, as a mind often can. And I was like, what is my favorite movie? And I'm like, oh, Footloose, that's such a great movie. Ren McCormick is so cute. Oh, he's just such a great guy. I wish I could be like him. Oh, Ren, that's such a great name. Oh my God, that's my name. And I'm like so excited in this moment that I can't even wait till the end of class to like turn to my friend and be like, hey, my name's Ren. And they're just like, oh, that's so cool. And so it became this like process of reintroducing myself to everyone I knew. And it always went positive, but that was because I was only telling people who I know would respond positively. And that's okay. Like, that's what I needed. I needed to feel held, and I needed to feel safe. And eventually there came a time where every new person I met would only ever know me as Ren. And that's really cool. That was 5 years ago. And to this day, the only people who really know that I have a different name are people who need it for legal purposes or because they're going to write me a check. But I do hope that there comes a day where I'm able to, like, lock that name in a closet and forget about it forever. But there's still some of this story that's left to be told or written or experienced, and I'm just grateful that I've made it this far. Thank you.
Thank you, Ren. Thank you to everyone who shared stories, and thank you all for holding this space. One thing that I really appreciate about story is the dynamic nature of stories. I feel like stories are never static. You know, they're never just one thing. They have so many layers and so much complexity to them. And even if you're like me, I'm even discovering new pieces about my own story, pieces that have already happened. And so I'd just like us to kind of sit with that too as we go about our week and noticing these stories around us and stories in people that we interact with. They're always changing. And there's always things to be learned from those stories.
Thanks for listening. We hope you take this conversation and keep it going. If we are adding value to your life, we appreciate your support of this work so we can engage more people in these conversations that matter for their real lives too. You can do that at fabricmpls.com/give. We'd also love to have you join us any Sunday morning at 10:30 at Field Community School in Minneapolis. That's at 4645 4th Avenue South. There are opportunities for kids of all ages to connect to. Learn more by searching Fabric Minneapolis.